Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. About a third of our lives is spent sleeping, and sleep is important for our physical, emotional, and mental health. It allows our bodies and brains to recuperate from the day and builds our immune function, something especially important during a pandemic. However, the CDC estimates that 30 to 40% of American adults sleep less than 6 hours a night. Sleep deprivation is often associated with increased risk of anxiety, depression, and our ability to cope with stress. As the pandemic has suddenly changed our lives and schedules, and has added more stress to our daily lives, you may have noticed your sleeping habits change. Whether you're sleeping more, less, or even remembering more dreams, our brains are working overtime, both while we are awake and asleep. To find out more about the science of our change in sleeping patterns, I'm joined by Dr. David Plant, the medical director of the Wisconsin Institute for Sleep and Consciousness. He starts by explaining if sleep differs between men and women.
Fundamentally, men and women sleep similarly. So we all have the same brain, and our brain is really what generates sleep. So our brain actually cycles through these different three stages. There's wakefulness, and then there's two kinds of sleep. There's something called rapid eye movement sleep, or REM sleep, you might have heard of, and also non-rapid eye movement sleep. And men and women both go through these same patterns of sleep very similarly. What's different between men and women is risk for different sleep disorders and sleep problems. So, for example, men are at an increased risk compared to women to have a sleep disorder called obstructive sleep apnea. That's a disorder where people have trouble breathing because the back of their throat collapses intermittently during sleep. Whereas women are at higher risk for some other sleep disorders like insomnia and restless leg syndrome compared to men. So insomnia is when you have difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep despite adequate opportunity. And restless leg syndrome is a sleep disorder where you have a very uncomfortable sensation where you feel like you need to move your legs at bedtime, which can interfere with and make it difficult to sleep. So the long and short of it is that men and women sleep very similarly, but they're at risk for different sleep problems over the course of their lives.
When we experience sleep problems, we often think of the effects it just has on us throughout that day, right? We're groggy, we aren't as motivated during work. But what are the larger implications sleep has on things like public health or even societal costs when the population is sleep deprived?
Well, I think that too is a great question and a great way of thinking about things. So we often think about how we are functioning by ourselves in terms of our sleep. So how do we sleep last night? How do I feel today? But the reality is our sleep definitely impacts others. So even before we think about the sort of bigger public health aspects, I like to think about the family even, because right now in the context of COVID-19, a lot of us are spending a lot more time with our families, and our family routines are pretty different. So how each of us sleeps can impact the other person's overall day. So for example, if you have young children at home, how they're sleeping has a pretty profound effect on people's psychological well-being if they're parents. And a lot of times parents may struggle if their children are sleeping because of all kinds of different family dynamics that can play out. So that's kind of on a more sort of local level. And then there's the bigger sort of societal standpoint or public health issues. So actually, sleep disorders are a really big and underappreciated public health problem, especially in the United States. So probably the biggest problem that we have is insufficient sleep. So the Center for Disease Control estimates that about 30 to 40% of adults in America sleep less than 6 hours per night, which is definitely less than what is typically recommended, which is usually about 8 hours per night. So there's a lot of chronic sleep deprivation in society. And that can lead to a whole host of long-term medical consequences for people. So we know that insufficient sleep is associated with things like increased risk of high blood pressure, increased risk of diabetes and poor glucose metabolism, and a whole host of other things. So there's obviously a public health risk there. And then there's also the risk of increased accidents, either in the workplace or on the road when people are sleep deprived. And that too is a major problem for all of us to think about.
As you mentioned when we first started, there's a lot of barriers to sleep in our current situations as we are all being safer at home and experiencing this pandemic together, either maybe under or oversleeping because there's a lack of schedule. We all have anxiety that is impacting our lives. But it seems that even if we are sleeping during this time, and one main thing that I'm very curious about personally is that maybe it doesn't feel like it's good rest, even if we're getting sleep. And a lot of people are dreaming more, whether it's nightmares or just remembering their dreams. So is there a specific like scientific explanation for how our brains are working during sleep right now that we are noticing changes in sleep patterns versus this is part of my everyday, I hit the bed and I get up and I go again next morning? Now it seems to have a greater lasting impact on how we're feeling and doing.
Well, there's probably a lot of things that are going on, and they may vary from person to person in terms of how their sleep quality is in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. There's some people who are probably saying that they're sleeping just fine and they don't have any specific problems. But for a lot of people, that's not the case. And they have noticed a pretty significant change in the quality of their sleep. And people probably notice different things or experience different problems. So as you alluded to, one thing that people are doing now more actually when we look at the data is it seems like people are actually sleeping a bit longer now that they're at home. If they are able to work from home or they may unfortunately be out of work, they may not have something to wake up for early. So they may allow themselves to sleep a bit longer. So in some ways you might think, well, that might actually help with the overall qualities of your sleep if you're potentially sleep deprived and now you're getting more. And so some people may feel better, but what a lot of people are noticing is they may start sleeping later and not keep a regular wake time. And so that can lead to a disruption in their routine. And then that can actually make it harder to sleep at night, either difficulty falling asleep or they may wake up more during the course of the night. There's also just the really big issue of stress and anxiety that's almost universal among folks at this point. And certainly how we feel and our level of stress can pretty significantly impact how we sleep at night and how we perceive the quality of our sleep. So even if we're in bed and we're pretty sure we slept most of the night, we may wake up feeling kind of fatigued or tired. And that could be because the stress during the day causes us to have what we call brief arousals at night. So that's a medical term for sort of a brief wake up of the brain where it comes to alertness. It's often, sometimes so short, we may not even be fully aware of it. So that can cause a decrease in the overall quality of sleep at night. And there may also be other sleep disorders that are sort of being brought to light or caused by some of the COVID-19 situation. So an example of that might be someone who has obstructive sleep apnea but didn't know that they had that problem. And what we've learned also is a lot of other patterns that affect sleep have changed. So in the mental health community, we're seeing a big increase in alcohol consumption, either to cope with chronic stress or not, or for other reasons. And we know that alcohol can relax the muscles of the upper airway and increase snoring and the likelihood of having sleep apnea. So that can actually cause people to wake up more, both the alcohol and potentially if they have some other undiagnosed sleep disorder. So there's a whole host of things that could be playing into a decreased quality of sleep that people may be having at this point in time in their lives.
Does dreaming change our sleep structure or quality of sleep?
Well, dreams are really interesting. So, you know, people have been wondering about dreams all the way, basically as long as human history has been recorded, and probably even before that. And we don't really exactly know what dreams are for. And it's actually a debated area in sleep medicine, sleep research about what exactly dreams do. What we do think is that dreams fundamentally probably help consolidate memory to a certain degree and sort of help us, again, process some of our daily activities. We also know that when people are dreaming, that different parts of the brain are active compared to when you're awake. So, for example, the parts of your brain that are responsible for vision, so something called the occipital cortex in the back of your head is more active, as are sort of parts of your brain that are involved in emotion regulation. So it's called the limbic system is relatively activated. But other parts of your brain, especially the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of your brain that's just behind your forehead, is sort of offline, relatively speaking, compared to when you're awake. And that's important because that part of your brain, that prefrontal cortex, is really important for helping with sort of reason, judgment, and logical thought. So that's why our dreams can be pretty weird at times and not make a lot of sense. But so we have these dreams, and we actually dream many, many times during the course of the night. Most of the time, most of our active dreaming in rapid eye movement or REM sleep. And REM sleep typically occurs in folks every 90 to 120 minutes, you go into a REM cycle that can last a variable amount of time. Usually those REM cycles get longer and longer as the night progresses. So a lot of times you remember having a dream when you wake up from REM sleep. You're much more likely to remember that you were dreaming about something. So we've known that since, you know, the 60s and 70s, they were doing experiments after they discovered REM sleep, where they put people in the sleep laboratory. They'd wait to see when they go into REM sleep, and then they'd wake them up to see if they remember their dream. And then they'd also wake them up during other stages of their sleep and find that they didn't remember dreams nearly as well. So a lot of how we think about our dreams and talk about them really relies on how well we remember the dream or have recall of it. So probably with COVID-19, we're not necessarily dreaming more, but we may be remembering a lot more of our dreams. And there's a whole host of reasons that may explain some of that. One of the reasons is we may be sleeping later. So because of the way that REM sleep is structured throughout the course of our nights, where the REM sleep gets longer and longer, if you're just more likely to wake up from REM sleep if you allow yourself to sleep a bit later. Also, we may have more anxiety and have those brief arousals that our brain is just spontaneously generating, and those can occur during REM sleep. So we may be more likely to wake up and remember a dream in that context. And then the other reason that we may remember dreams more, again, may vary from person to person, but some people have what we call trauma associated dreams or nightmares. And certainly if people have pretty significant traumatic experiences, they are more likely to wake up and have recollection of these more disturbing dreams as well.
With stress-related fatigue being a constant for all of us, whether we're adults or even children are experiencing this, of course, is sleep even more important during a pandemic? You know, children of varying ages, they have naps during the day. But as adults, and if we're at home, we may be tempted to nap during the day because we're just feeling more tired during all of this. Are they very useful to nap more as adults during this time? Or is it best to just try and establish a better sleeping pattern at night?
Well, naps are really interesting. Not all naps are bad, but in general, we tend to recommend trying to avoid naps for a few different reasons. So naps are just when you go to sleep during the day. And usually those naps are relatively short. And sometimes, you know, a brief nap can be very refreshing for certain individuals, as some individuals find absolutely no benefit from naps. They either can't fall asleep or they actually feel like they wake up feeling more groggy. So especially if you're one of those folks who you don't even perceive any noticeable benefit from taking a nap, it's probably best to try to avoid it. Now, most people, when they feel like they might need a nap, it actually occurs in the mid to late afternoon. A lot of people blame that on having a big lunch. And even some cultures have siestas that are planned. So they go home after lunch and they take a nap or they rest. And it turns out that actually the reason for that is pretty tied into our circadian rhythm. There's a little tiny dip in the afternoon that just happens naturally in everyone. So it's a very common experience that people may feel more tired and feel like they may want to take a nap in the afternoon. But then if they stay awake, that usually resolves itself by the early evening hours. Now, getting back to your original question about whether or not people should nap, we generally recommend not napping, largely because what happens is you can really disrupt your sleep at night if you do so. So when we nap, we pay off that sleep debt, that homeostatic sleep drive, which is really important to build up during the course of the day so that we can actually, when we go to sleep at night, pay it off and have relatively consolidated sleep. So if we spend time during the day sleeping, it's oftentimes much harder for us to sleep at night. And especially if you're having problems with insomnia, so difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, daytime napping can be a real problem and exacerbate and perpetuate the problem.
Do you think that this period we're going through of heightened anxiety could lead to long-lasting implications of more people suffering from insomnia or other sleep-related problems? Because I think a lot of people are maybe experiencing these things for the first time.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think that anytime you have a stressor, you're more likely to increase risk for insomnia, anxiety, and depression. And those three things are actually intimately tied to one another. So a lot of times insomnia occurs well before people develop more significant anxiety and depressive problems, or they can co-occur. And then over time, they sort of play off one another, oftentimes in a bit of a vicious cycle. So with so many people under so much stress for a whole number of reasons, the rates of insomnia are certainly going up. So there are surveys that have been done in different countries, and there are a number that are being done right now that have all pretty consistently shown that, you know, during these times, complaints about difficulty falling asleep and staying asleep go up. And I suspect for a number of people, those problems may get better as we move towards a new normal eventually, and some of these issues resolve. But for a number of people, what happens is their insomnia stays even after that acute stressor is long gone. Right now, we're in an unusual situation of a widespread and chronic stressor, which is very challenging, and we don't know how that will all play out. But I suspect people will have a lot of residual insomnia even well after COVID-19 has left us.
So in the meantime, what steps can we take to improve our sleep? And, you know, realistically, how long can it take before we experience some consistent, more positive changes and experiences?
So it's very easy to focus on how poorly you slept on one specific night. But the reality is all of our sleep quality and experience will vary from night to night. And so what you're trying to do is over time develop better sleep habits and sleep patterns that can sort of improve your overall quality of sleep. So that's the first thing. You know, don't get too fixated on one bad night. You want to look at the longer term. So there's a whole number of things that we recommend to people to try to improve their overall quality of sleep. And then there's a number that are also a little bit more specific to the COVID-19 situation. So when we first started off this interview, I talked about how really COVID-19 has really impacted our daily routines pretty dramatically. And so one of the big problems people are having with their sleep is they're letting themselves get out of their routine very easily. And what we want to try to do to improve the quality of your sleep at night, you also want to have a pretty standard daytime routine during the day that can help you sort of get back to getting into a pattern of living. So trying to keep a regular wake time 7 days per week is very important. Okay. So, and then when you wake up, trying to get light exposure. A lot of us are spending a lot of times secluded in our homes, not getting much light. And again, light helps tell our bodies, hey, it's time to be awake and alert. Also doing some of the typical things that we normally do if we're going to work, you know, things like showering, getting dressed, those kinds of things. Those are also important cues for our body about what time of day it is. Keeping even regular eating schedules. We've already talked a little bit about the importance of trying to avoid naps if you're having trouble sleeping at night. Another thing that's very helpful is getting exercise. So vigorous exercise during the day increases something called slow wave sleep at night. So slow wave sleep is sort of the deepest and thought to be most restorative aspects of sleep. We do recommend, though, if you're going to exercise, you don't want to do it too close to bedtime. So usually the best time is sometime during the day or by the late afternoon. And you want to give yourself ideally at least 4 to 6 hours for the most part to kind of wind down before you, after vigorous exercise, before you try to sleep. And then some other things we recommend are kind of common sense to a certain degree, but avoiding too much caffeine, especially late in the day. And then also avoiding alcohol before bed, because it can both relax the muscles of the upper airway, which we talked about a little bit in the context of sleep apnea, but also alcohol can really disrupt our sleep patterns pretty significantly. So we know that alcohol helps people fall asleep if they drink it right before bed, But it turns out that what happens is after an hour or two, you really sort of end up paying doubly for it. So the alcohol, after it leaves your system, causes your brain to have a lot of arousals during the second half of the night, where the quality of your sleep is quite poor because you drank alcohol before you got into bed. And the other problem with alcohol is it's what we call a diuretic. So it makes you want to urinate. And when that happens, obviously you have to wake up to go to the bathroom, and that can disrupt your sleep as well. So definitely don't recommend people using alcohol as a sleeping medication, because that can get you into a lot of difficulty.
All right. Well, Dr. David Plante, thank you so much for sharing the knowledge and these tips to help us cope and get some better sleep during this time.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Dr. David Plante is the medical director of the Wisconsin Institute for Sleep and Consciousness and an assistant professor of psychiatry at UW-Madison. He joined me for this month's Fit for You segment, and you can explore past Fit for Yous at wuwm.com.